Welcome to If You Love This Planet. I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and in this program we talk about the greatest medical and environmental threats to all life, such as nuclear weapons and nuclear power, global warming, ozone depletion, toxic pollution, deforestation, and many other social and political issues that relate to global well-being. So if you love this planet, keep listening. Hello and welcome to If You Love This Planet. On the program today, I'm speaking with Dr. Winfried Eisenberg, a pediatrician like me and a member of the German IPPNW board from 2003 to 2007. IPPNW stands for International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, which was given the Nobel Peace Prize in 1985. And I started many of the groups around the world, I have to say, including Germany. Winfried Eisenberg worked as a mission doctor in the south of Tanzania, East Africa, in the late 1960s, and was the director of the pediatric clinic of the Herford North Rhine-Westphalia Hospital in Germany from 1984 through to 2002. Some of the issues Dr. Eisenberg has concentrated on over the years are nuclear disarmament, hazards of nuclear energy, and the health consequences of Chernobyl. He was also involved in the KIKK study, which we'll find out more about, and he has an interest in human rights, especially for refugees. Dr. Winfried Eisenberg joins me now on the line from Germany. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Helen, for this fine introduction. It's too much of honor for me.
No, that's not right. It's not enough honor. We established before the interview that you actually were a director of a pediatric hospital, but you specialize more in neonatology and embryology. Is that correct?
That's correct. But, of course, being the director of the pediatric hospital, I had to be somehow an all-rounder in
yes.
pediatrics. But my main interests and main studies were in perinatology and neonatology. That's true.
Yes, yes. Now, okay, so let's get on with the program. What triggered your interest in nuclear disarmament, the hazards of nuclear energy, the health consequences of Chernobyl? What was it, Dr. Eisenberg, which triggered your concern about these industries?
In the early 80s of the last century, there was a horrible situation all over the world. We here in the middle of Europe were really afraid that nuclear war would soon start, because at the so-called Iron Curtain, the West and the East powers armed up to the teeth with nuclear weapons, threatened each other to make them vanish from the globe.
You mean make the Soviet Union vanish or make America vanish?
Yes.
Both of them.
Yeah. And this threat was somehow over us, and nobody had the idea to plan his life, his professional and familial life, because nuclear war would soon make everything to end.
Yeah.
And in this situation, IPPNW arose, and it was, yeah, something like freeing. I felt more free to be able to work with IPPNW, to do something. So I was a member from the beginning, from 1982,
yes,
when the German branch of IPPNW started.
Yes, that's wonderful. Now, just to continue on that theme, though, Dr. Eisenberg, there was a terrible threat, and I met with Reagan for an hour and a half trying to teach him about the threat of nuclear war in 1982. But what's happened to that threat? Would you like to talk about that now and how people in Germany feel about the nuclear situation between Russia and America at this time?
Yeah, we had many protests, many demonstrations, not only organized by IPPNW, but also by a very powerful peace movement, which started in the early 80s.
In Germany.
In Germany.
Yes.
For example, at a place in the south of Germany called Mutlangen.
Yes.
Was the site where the U.S. wanted to establish Pershing 2
missiles that took 3 minutes to hit Moscow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They said this had to be the answer for the SS-20 missiles from the other side. But our opinion was, such a place where Pershings were situated would just be a target to attract other missiles. And even many prominent people from Germany did sit-ins, or sit-ins, you call it, I think,
sit-ins
at the gates,
yes,
of that place in Mutlangen.
Yes.
And I myself took several times part in these demonstrations, and we were called to court and so on. But also in Bonn, which was the former capital of West Germany, we had in 1986 or 7 large demonstrations with more than 500,000 people on the lake.
Yes, I spoke at one of those. Was amazing. But let me ask you again, what do you think of this nuclear situation today between Russia and America?
Aha, maybe I misunderstood.
That's all right.
Your question. Yeah, I thought about that time in the 80s. Yeah, today the USA and Russia still have plenty of nuclear weapons and warheads, although the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, demands the nuclear powers to destroy slow by slow their weapons. But they don't do so, and even produce new generations like bunker busters and so on.
Yeah.
And even here in Germany, we have still probably 20 nuclear warheads owned by the U.S., but the German Bundeswehr, German soldiers practice or exercise, train to throw these bombs someday somewhere. And We always call to Madame Merkel, who is our chancellor, to start nuclear disarmament here at our own country.
And what does she say, Chancellor Merkel?
She at least listens to our arguments, but the nowadays government still keeps to this, what we call nukleare Teilhabe. That means to be involved somehow in nuclear weapons. Although this was forbidden to Germany, they still stick to it, and we hope that the new U.S. President Obama will sooner or later withdraw these last nuclear weapons from our country.
Well, the situation today, just to give a rough summary, is that there are about 28,000 hydrogen bombs still in the world, and of those, Russia and America own 97% of them, And each side, Russia and America, still have thousands of nuclear weapons in missiles that, when launched, only take half an hour to hit Russia or America. And there's such a redundancy of these weapons. 60 of them, hydrogen bombs, are targeted on New York City alone. It would be the same for Moscow. So we're still facing annihilation, Dr. Eisenberg, the end of the earth. And so from a medical perspective, you know, we're worried about global warming, and that's very serious. But not many people now are talking about nuclear annihilation, although it could actually happen tonight because of a computer error, right?
Yeah, I agree with all this, yeah.
We need to get IPPNW, the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, to get going again on this subject. I think they kind of dropped it after the Cold War ended. Let's, though, move on now to why did you get involved in the hazards of nuclear energy, Dr. Eisenberg, and the health consequences of Chernobyl?
In fact, the German branch of IPPNW dealt with the hazards of nuclear energy, the so-called peaceful atoms, from the beginning. Many other sections, like in Sweden or US, only worked against the nuclear weapons. But
yes,
in Germany, very early, we said nuclear energy and nuclear weapons are only the two sides of the same coin.
Yes.
And therefore, we dealt with these problems also long before Chernobyl. But when in 1986 the Chernobyl disaster happened, of course, this part of our work grew much stronger, and was for some time, at least after the end of the so-called Cold War, was even the main subject of our work.
Yes, well, can you remember where you were, Dr. Eisenberg, when the Chernobyl accident happened? Were you in Berlin, or where were you?
No, I was with my family in our house in Herford, North Rhine-Westphalia, where I am still living. And I remember very well the 1st of May was a wonderful day in that year, wonderful morning, and we sat on our veranda, and I went down into the garden and picked up some herbs for our breakfast, and we ate that, and only a few hours later we got the news that the heavy rains of the night before were contaminated with fallout from Chernobyl.
Oh, my God.
That was about, the accident was the 26th of April.
Yes.
So this was 5 days later when the cloud arrived in Germany. And some parts of Germany, especially in the south, Bavaria and Baden-Württemberg, were heavily contaminated, not as heavy as the south of Belarus and the north of Ukraine. But anyway, it was very severe problem even in Germany.
And they still are contaminated because many of the radioactive materials, like strontium-90, last for 600 years, and cesium-137 lasts for 600 years, and plutonium, and one-third of the inventory from Chernobyl of plutonium escaped. There are usually 250 kilos in a reactor like Chernobyl. So plutonium lasts for 500,000 years. So obviously people who grow food in those very contaminated areas, the food sucks up the radiation, doesn't it, and concentrates it.
That's true, and especially children are in danger because they grow and they assimilate. They have to assimilate more than they dissimilate to build up their bodies. And especially in strontium 90, which you mentioned, this is very dangerous because it is misunderstood for calcium, and incorporated in the bones and teeth.
Yes.
And from the bones, of course, they send their beta particles into the bone marrow where the blood is being produced. And this is probably one of the main reasons for childhood leukemia.
Are you seeing then, as a pediatrician, Dr. Eisenberg, an increased incidence of childhood cancer and leukemia in your medical practice or in your hospital since Chernobyl?
This the increase of leukemia was not very obvious. We have in Germany about 4 to 5 new cases per 100,000 children under 15 years of age per year. Before Chernobyl, it was, I think, 4.2 per 100,000 per year, and now it is 4.9, something near 5.
Oh.
So there is a slight increase.
What about other childhood cancers?
As far as I know, leukemia is the type of malignant disease in children which is most caused by radioactivity. All the other, the solid tumors, are also increasing around, for example, also now around nuclear power plants, but not as obvious as leukemia does.
Yes.
The solid cancers, for example, brain tumors and especially thyroid tumors in the south of Belarus have very much increased indeed. But in Germany, this is not so obvious.
Right. Yeah, but people, I know that people were very frightened all through Europe after Chernobyl, and in fact 40% of the European landmass remains relatively radioactive from the fallout. But has that anxiety gone away now and people are, you know, forgetting about the dangers and proceeding with their daily lives and eating locally grown food?
We have a saying here that half-life period of human remembering, is that correct?
Yeah.
Is very short.
Memory, half-life of human memory.
Half-life period of memory. At least shorter than the half-life period of strontium 90 or cesium 137.
Yes.
So people tend to to push these things away. Even in Belarus and Ukraine, we have some connections to those two people there.
Yes.
They just try to live and not always to think about the hazards after Chernobyl.
No.
But of course, we have to inform people what it means, what it still means. Generations.
What did you do about your food after Chernobyl, Dr. Eisenberg, for the next couple of years? Were you very careful about what you ate? What did you eat and the family?
At least in the first weeks, as long as iodine 131 was in the air and in the milk, we had to be very careful. Especially as we had, our four children were small at that time.
Yes.
Very young. So within a few days, the long-term milk produced before the accident. president had run out from all stores.
Right.
Because all people, at least families with children, tried to buy this milk, which normally was not only exceptionally being used, because children demand normally fresh milk. But that time we had everybody preferred the old milk produced before that accident.
Yes, powdered milk or condensed milk, I suppose. Tell us, as you're a pediatrician, Dr. Eisenberg, why is it that children are so very sensitive to radiation, and also especially embryos and fetuses?
This is indeed one of my main subjects, because it's not very well known, even by physicians, why children, the younger, the more, are so very vulnerable towards radiation.
Mm-hmm.
The first and the main reason is that growing, and children grow, as long as they grow, they are children. Growing means high rates of cell division.
Yes.
In all organs, so-called
yes.
mitosis. And it's well known that radiation endangers cells, especially during the division phases.
Mm.
And not during the phases of non-division, the quiet phases.
Mm.
This is, as far as I know, the main reason. And therefore, because the embryo is by far most vulnerable, because he just grows like an explosion almost,
mm.
Therefore, we have proposed to replace the so-called reference man by the reference embryo.
Okay, so now you need to describe what the reference man is, ICRP 1974, decided on the reference man. What is a reference man? And why does the nuclear industry use a reference man to relate the radiation exposure it produces to populations? Why is the reference man used, Dr. Eisenberg?
Yeah, the reference man was defined being a young man of about 25 to 30 years of age, of average height and weight, having intact cell repair mechanisms and being healthy, being a white man living in North America or Europe. And he was used to try to establish models of radiation, of danger due to radiation, and such a young, healthy man probably can bear higher levels of radiation than an embryo does or than a child does. But this reference man is still used not only in the USA, but everywhere where models of biokinetic and dispersion in the surrounding and so on are used. And that's why we demand the reference embryo should be used. This is a new term produced by our German IPPNW.
How much more sensitive is the reference embryo to radiation than the reference man, Dr. Eisenberg?
Nobody knows exactly, but it may be many hundred fold.
Really?
Maybe even thousandfold more in danger than a young, healthy man.
And what about a child? How many?
Yeah, all these all this is very difficult to put in exact numbers.
Yeah.
But even a newborn child or an infant is much more, maybe 50 times more susceptible than a young adult, healthy man.
And a child about 20 times more susceptible?
A child of school age, yes, or preschool age, maybe like that.
Yeah.
But nobody knows these figures exactly, but it plays a role in the discussion about this, what you mentioned already, this KIKK study, because even those promoting nuclear energy slowly start to agree that children might be, as they
might
say very
be.
Carefully, might be more sensitive than adults.
That is just, I mean, in medicine, it's not might. Ah, you know, one X-ray to the pregnant abdomen doubles the incidence of leukemia in that child, and that's a very low dose of radiation.
May I continue with the causes of children's extreme susceptibility,
yes,
to radiation?
Yes, please, yes.
I mentioned this high rate of cell division.
Yes.
But the second point is that what they call the cell repair mechanisms, that means we are luckily able to find out and to eliminate wrong cells, which had somehow an accident under division.
The body can.
Yes. Detect and eliminate such,
yes,
cells. If we would not have this these repair mechanisms, we all would sooner or later suffer from cancer, for example.
Yes.
But children, and especially embryos, who just grow, they have not yet these repair mechanisms in function, or at least not yet sufficient. That's another point.
Yes.
And the third one I mentioned before, due to growing, children have what we call a positive balance of substances. That means they have to assimilate more than they dissimilate to build up their body.
You mean calcium and iodine and all the minerals and the like?
Yeah,
right?
Everything which is necessary to have the body gaining weight and height.
Yes.
And the last point I should like to mention is that the life expectancy of children is higher than for adults, or at least for adults of the older generation like me. That means they will experience the latency of certain diseases. Latency means some diseases caused by radiation have a long latency period from the exposure to this radiation until the disease can be diagnosed.
Yes.
This may be 20, 30 or even more years, for example, in solid tumors.
Yes.
And like myself, I will not experience this time anyway, but children, of course, will do, because they have their life in front of them.
Mm. So it seems most sensible, and I guess I admit I've never thought of this myself, to replace the reference man with the reference embryo, because they're so inordinately sensitive and they're the future of the human race. And in medicine, Dr. Eisenberg, we always, when we're prognosticating a person with a disease, take the worst possible scenario that could develop and work to prevent that. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, yes, it is.
So we take the most vulnerable sector of society, which is the embryo, and protect that, right?
Yes, that's the idea behind proposing the reference embryo to check all these so-called current assumptions of models on which current radiation safety standards and regulations are based.
This has
to be reassessed.
Yes. How has the nuclear energy industry and the health physicists associated with it, how have they responded to the notion of the reference embryo?
Yeah, they by bad luck, they have not yet agreed to that.
Mm.
But anyway, our Minister of Environment and Reactor Safety, Mr. Gabriel, has at least discussed it with us.
Mm.
And I think he has somehow an open ear.
That's very, very, very good. Very good. And maybe Germany can lead the world into, you know, a relatively safe future in this area. Tell us, Dr. Eisenberg, what is happening? You've got 16 commercial nuclear power plants in Germany. And there was, I think, a law passed to close them down when they finished their operating life. Does that law still stand, or has Chancellor Merkel changed it?
This law still stands, and we are fighting for it that it remains, even after the next federal elections, which will be in the end of this month.
Oh, really?
We are a bit afraid that the major right-wing parties,
yes,
the Christian Democrats and the Liberals, may have a majority, and then they might break down this agreement.
Might. Yes, might revoke
which
that law.
Stems from the social and green government from something like 2000, saying that reactors have to be closed down after they have produced a certain amount of electricity.
Mm.
Usually, will that be after 36 years of operation? Few Stade and Oppresheim have already been closed down,
yes,
after this law.
Yeah.
But four others should have been stopped within the last years. But the operators use dirty tricks to avoid closing down until the next election.
Because they're making money. Yes, that's right. So let's now get on, Dr. Eisenberg, to this study, KIKK study. What is it all about, and how did it start, and who did the study?
Yeah. This acronym, KIKK, means or comes from the German expression Kinderkrebs um Kernkraftwerke. There we have this KIKK letters in this expression.
Children.
And this means childhood cancer in the vicinity of nuclear power plants.
Right.
This study was commissioned in 2003 by the Federal Office for Radiation Protection, which we call the Bundesamt für Strahlenschutz. And it was carried out by the German Childhood Cancer Registry, which is under the roof of the University of Mainz. We call it the Kinderkrebsregister.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason to commission and to start this study was that people, families living around nuclear power plants, very eagerly for many years demanded such a sophisticated study, because there was not only the impression, but it was obvious that at least leukemia in young children occurred more often in the surrounding, in the near surrounding of the plants than at other places. So there were more than 10,000 signatures under such a demand to the Bundesamt für Strahlenschutz coming from South and North Germany. Perhaps you have heard about this leukemia cluster around Krümmel. Krümmel is a nuclear power plant near Hamburg in the north of Germany at the Elbe River. And there in the early 90s, last century, we had, instead of one expected case of leukemia, statistically expected, we had 16.
Oh no, 16?
Within a few years.
Oh.
So nowhere in the world, to my knowledge, exists such a bad cluster of childhood leukemia. And there were also, from the 1980s, from Great Britain and other countries, even earlier studies in Germany, there was a suspicion that children suffered more from these diseases when they lived near such a power plant.
Yes.
The study was supervised and accompanied by an external expert group consisting of 12 scientists with different specializations. There were pediatricians, statisticians, epidemiologists, and physicists. The study was published in December 2007. That's perhaps the main point about the beginning of this study. Perhaps I should mention the design of the study, the draft. It was a so-called case control study. The cases, that means the sick children in the surrounding of up to 50 kilometers around the plants.
Yes.
The data of these children were known in the Childhood Cancer Registry at Mainz.
Yes.
There were 1,592 under fives with cancer in these areas within the period of time studied from 1980 to 2003.
Yes.
And 593 thereof had leukemia. And the researchers used the threefold number. That means almost 5,000 control children.
Yes.
Living in the same areas and being of the same age and gender. So
yeah.
That's what they call a matched case control study.
Mm.
And the study covered all 15 regions with nuclear power plants. In that time in Germany, we had 21 reactor blocks on the grid. Nowadays, there are only 17 left. That's about the design.
And the results.
The questions which should be answered by the study were as follows. The first, does cancer in under fives occur more often in the vicinity of nuclear power plants?
Yep.
And the second question, if so, is there a relationship between nearness and an increased risk? Also the degree of distance of the living places of the children, does it play a role?
Yes.
And the third question was, are there perhaps factors which might possibly influence the results, so-called confounders?
Mm-hmm.
And all involved in this study had agreed before, this is important for the later discussion, the exact distance between the place of residence and the NPP exhaust stacks is used as a substitute, as a surrogate, they called it, for the presumable average local radiation.
Mm.
That was necessary because only by this agreement, this question if there was a relationship between nearness and increased risk could be answered. And on the other hand, in more than 6,000 places, you merely cannot measure directly the local radiation.
No.
Especially not going back to 1980.
No.
So they took the distance as a substitute for the
dose.
Expected local radiation.
Yep. And
that was the new thing in this study.
Yes, and so what did the results show, Dr. Eisenberg?
Yeah, the results concerning under fives, at first in the 5 kilometer radius, that's about 3.2 miles as far as I know, around the NPPs, all cancers were 77 instead of 48 expected statistically. That means the increased risk was 60%.
Yeah.
And part of all cancers were the leukemias. There were 37 instead of 17 expected. So 20 children suffered from leukemia within these 24 years, one must say, in the 5 kilometer radius, only because they lived there. So that means the increased risk concerning leukemia only is 120%.
Mm.
And in the larger distance, in up to 50 kilometers,
yes,
an effect could be shown. Also, the significance, of course, grew less the farther the place was away from the chimney.
Yeah.
Anyway, in the 50-kilometer radius, of all these 15 locations, they had found about 275 more cancer cases than expected. So we thought this was an unequivocal proximity increased risk trend.
Yes, yes. Okay, so this is a very, very excellent study. The first one of its kind to be done in the world, surprisingly so, surprisingly so. And I think that it should be extrapolated to the United States and that communities living around nuclear power plants, there are 103 in operation in America, should demand a similar study from their government. Would you agree, Dr. Eisenberg?
I think that would be very interesting. And the same, what you just proposed, was proposed by in a very new, very recently published work by Rudi Nussbaum. Perhaps you know him.
Yes, I do know Rudi. I've read his study.
Oh, yeah. He has published in the International Journal of Occupational and Environmental Health.
Yes.
In June or July this year, so it's very new. And he has also proposed that in the US a similar study should be done. I think that would be very interesting.
There are two meta-analyses, which means that separate studies in different countries are brought together to show there is an increased incidence of childhood leukemia around reactors in Britain, Spain, and I can't remember the other countries, but would you like to comment about that meta-analysis, Dr. Eisenberg?
Yes, I know about that analysis by Baker and Toole from the, I think, North Carolina University. They indeed found also in this study brought together many studies, as you said, from US, Spain, Germany, Great Britain, Japan, and other countries. And they found also an increased leukemia risk in the vicinity of nuclear power plants. under the line of all these published works. In fact, this increase was not that, or the significance was not that high as it was in the KIKK study. Mm-hmm. But anyway, even this meta-analysis of Baker and others supports
the
findings of our German study.
That's right. Clearly, we need to do that study in the United States as soon as possible. And I think I'm going to be doing a speaking tour in the United States. I need to start talking about that, and in Canada as well. And we need to get it into the official circles of government. Now, if the results in the United States and Canada, for instance, of such a similar study supported the KIKK study in Germany, would you then propose, as a paediatrician, that all nuclear power plants should be closed down because of this increased risk to children?
I did this already. I wouldn't wait for a similar result from the US or Canada. I think nuclear power plants are too dangerous. Even if you don't think about accidents like Chernobyl or Windscale or Harrisburg, even in the normal day-to-day operation, they are dangerous and they should be closed down all over the world.
They should be. I totally agree with that. And we're coming from a medical perspective, practicing preventive medicine, both of us who are pediatricians. Of course, my specialty, Dr. Eisenberg, is cystic fibrosis, the most common fatal genetic disease of childhood. And because of the massive amounts of radioactive waste being made, and that will leak inevitably into food chains through many future generations, we will, I think, inevitably see an increased incidence of many genetic diseases in children. Would you agree with that?
I'm afraid you are right. I know many studies in certain animals around Chernobyl. For example, a barn swallow has almost died out already, which was very common there.
Yeah.
And in a certain type of field mice, Finnish investigators found what they called Chernobyl hazards, the genome or something like that.
Yeah.
Brings or disturbs very much the genes of these animals, and they will also soon die out. So in these field mice have two generations per year. So since Chernobyl, there are already 46 generations, and hardly to think about 46 next generations in humans. This will take some many hundreds, thousands of years, and we will still have to deal with such accidents. All our, I myself have four children and six grandchildren, and all those generations coming after them will still have to will still be in trouble with radioactivity.
Yes.
Even if we close down everything just now.
Yes, because of the radioactive waste produced, hundreds of thousands of tons. There are now described over 23,000 genetic diseases in childhood, Dr. Eisenberg. That's a huge number, and the number is increasing as we learn more. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so any of these diseases could be induced by radiation damage to the genes in the egg and sperm. Not just, of course, humans, but then we're talking about animals and plants that also suffer mutations in relation to radiation, and they could animals of course develop cancer, and plants do too, and the flora and fauna could also be damaged genetically in the future because of radiation.
Yes.
So it's
I should like to mention, maybe you know Ian Fairley, British scientist.
Ian Fairley, yes.
Ian Fairley. He has many times pointed out how dangerous heavy hydrogen, H3.
Tritium.
How dangerous that is, because our body, and especially that of young children, contains quite a lot of water. And if there is tritium, it will easily be placed even in the genes, and also the beta particles emitted by tritium have a very short range. But if these emitters are situated in the genes themselves, the short range is is enough to produce harm to the genes.
Yes.
And this tritium, which is always neglected more or less as one of the main radionuclides coming out from the stacks of the nuclear power plants, may play a big role in this, what you just mentioned,
yes,
the genetic diseases.
Well, tritium is an interesting isotope or radioactive isotope, because it there's nothing that will prevent it from escaping. It gets out of containers made of stainless steel or glass or plastic.
Yeah.
The only thing that it can't get out of is gold, because gold is so dense. So a nuclear power plant, when operating, emits tritium at will, the whole time.
Yes.
Yes. And then the tritium H3 combines with an oxygen molecule to form tritiated water. And
yes,
if someone's enveloped in a cloud or a fog next to a nuclear power plant, actually the tritiated water can be absorbed straight through the skin and also in the lung, but the skin normally doesn't allow anything to get through it, but tritium gets through.
Yeah.
It's
so you agree with what Ian Fairley has
I totally agree. I've written about it in my books, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming.
Yes, I know it.
Yes, yeah. And there's a large literature on tritium produced by the nuclear industry and health physicists, because they're really, really scared about it. But they tell the public, don't worry, it's only radioactive hydrogen. It's So look, we are nearing the end of our time, Dr. Eisenberg. I think that the message today has been extremely important from a medical perspective, preventive medicine, that because we have now proven, and it will show more and more in later studies, that people living around reactors, particularly children, are so sensitive to radiation and have an increased risk of developing cancer and leukemia, every single nuclear power plant in the world should be closed down. We agree.
Yes.
Yes, we do.
I do.
I do too. Tell me, what's the attitude of most pediatricians in Germany? Do they agree with you, or they do not understand this study?
Most pediatricians agree with our concerns.
Yes.
And the number of pediatricians being members in the IPPNW is much over the expected number.
Oh.
So more pediatricians than any other specializations of medicine are represented in our IPPNW branch.
Well, may I make a suggestion? What about a delegation of pediatricians, probably in their white coats with stethoscopes around their necks, visiting Chancellor Merkel to teach her about the radiation effects and why all the reactors in Germany should be closed? And if you get a new government, you must do it with them too, because even if they're really conservative and right-wing politicians, they do love their children.
Yes, you are right. And in fact, we are on that line now. The day after tomorrow, Saturday the 5th, we shall have a big anti-nuclear demonstration in Berlin, We expect some tens of thousands participants, and there will be about 200 or even more farmers from the site where they want to bury the nuclear waste.
Gorleben.
It's called Gorleben.
Yeah, Gorleben.
It's the salt dome.
Yeah.
Very unsafe. Everybody knows about it. And the farmers from that area are very active, and they are already for 3 days on the way with their tractors to Berlin.
That's wonderful.
A very wonderful demonstration.
Well, that's wonderful. And we could do the same thing in Washington. We could get all the farmers around nuclear power plants and radioactive waste facilities to bring their tractors. We could have thousands of tractors clogging up the streets in Washington. I think
it's a very good thing. And IPPNW will be there in white coats, as you suggested, and we will bring a message to Chancellor Merkel.
Well, Dr. Eisenberg, thank you so much for this fascinating interview, really groundbreaking information. And I hope everyone listening to the program, whether they're in the United States or Canada or Australia, take our suggestions really seriously and help us to close down all nuclear power plants in the world. So thank you very much, Dr. Eisenberg.
Thank you very much as well.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
My guest today was Dr. Winfried Eisenberg, a pediatrician and a member of the German IPPNW board from 2003 to 2007. For more information on IPPNW, International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, go to www.ippnw.org. And thank you very much for listening again today, and we'll certainly talk to you next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.